This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Yawning this morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Tuesday, the 22nd of November 2022, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. It is Tuesday, the 22nd of November, and it's usually our World News Tuesday with Mark Palmer and Gail Hanna, but we're switching it up today, and I have members of the community, people living and with and working with diabetes, to join us today. But before we get there, I got a couple of things to say. I know yesterday I talked at the top of the show extensively about traffic, in particular about the fatalities over the weekend. I still haven't been able to confirm whether there were three or four, but three is more than enough, right? We've well exceeded our limit at three. And this morning I feel compelled to talk about it just for a moment more. You see, when I hear the government and government actors say things like how you expect the government to stop crime, like how you expect the police to stop people from murdering each other, how are we supposed to even know that's what people are thinking about, right? Like, that's what's about to happen. And successive governments take the burden off of themselves, throw it into the wild. You know, they sort of toss it into the air with no concern about where it falls. But I want to share with you the good news. The good news is that government can moderate behavior, right? Not only can it moderate behavior, it has an obligation to moderate behavior. In fact, it willingly attempts to moderate behavior when it suits their purposes, right? When it suits their purpose, when it fulfills their agenda, when it benefits them, when they need us to do something for them, they can very easily engage in modes and systems and programs to moderate behavior. But any time someone tells you the government can't do anything about crime, not really, that's not our responsibility, right? You remind them that countries all over the world, developed countries, countries that they are modeling, countries that they refer to for advice, that those countries somehow have been able to use traffic management to moderate public behavior and to moderate the behavior of individuals in private. Don't let nobody tell you it can't be done. But more importantly, don't let them tell you it's not important. Because beyond the public safety issue and issues that arise, there's an economic issue. And that economic issue is the effective and efficient movement of goods, people, and services that underpin your economy. Right? One of the reasons why we can't meet our bottom lines is because we cannot effectively operate the systems we put in place, because we cannot rely on the smooth flow, or even forget smooth, the consistent flow of traffic. It's like the emperor is naked. And while we're sitting here talking about cryptocurrency, the cryptosphere, and a regulatory regime, we can't even take hold and control of the most basic systems in our... From home straight in here is nothing but blatant, flagrant, and unnecessary breaches in traffic controls, traffic codes, public decency, just common sense. Like, did Margaritaville, the point, the government, whoever's responsible for our newest tourist product, did they build the park with the benches for people to sit in, for taxis to park on? Did they tile that space for taxis to park their car on, or for tourists and people to sit and wait and enjoy the atmosphere and ambiance? Tell me, are we constantly giving away our resources to foreigners for people to just do foolishness with them? You all know I like to declare my biases, right? I love to declare my biases. I drive up Shirley Street this morning. The driver blew the horn because somebody had breached our line. One thing I love about Bahamians, buddy, don't tell them they almost kill you on the road. You want to enrage them? Don't warn them. Don't say, hey, I blew my horn because you almost hit me. Don't do that. You want to start a fight in the road, eh? Dear Bahamians, we have many crises in front of us, right? Things that we have to deal with. But don't be alarmed, because the solution is also right in front of us. You take care of the pennies and the dollars will take care of themselves. Things, and get them right. And by the time you get them right, those things that were bigger will now shrink, because you have the capacity to control and resolve them. Focus on the small things. Anyway, we're going to let that end there. This morning, I have guests joining me, like I said, from the community of people working with and living with diabetes and diabetics. I'd like to introduce my guests this morning. In fact, I want to let them introduce themselves. Good morning, Dario Charlton. Good morning, Mr. Charlton.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm well, and how are you?
I am good, thank you. And good morning, Nurse Anita Cates.
Hey, good morning, Aaron. You sound bright this morning. You doing well?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Awesome.
I'm doing well. So I'd like to start by asking you to introduce yourselves and the organizations that you are representing today.
Ladies first.
Oh, bless your heart. Yeah, so my name's Anita Cates. I am a nurse, a community specialist in community health, and I am also a certified diabetes educator. And today, I come in the capacity of ACE Diabetes, which is a local charity, which stands for Awareness, Compassion, and Education for those who are being affected by diabetes.
Thank you. Mr. Charlton?
Good morning, Bahamas. I am Dario Charlton. I'm a type 1 diabetic, and I've been type 1 for almost 18 years now. I represent that small number, that few thousand of us type ones out there, and wanting to help to raise the awareness and advance the education around the treatment and us living with diabetes, learning not to have to suffer from it.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining me today. I know that I think it was November 14th was World Diabetes Day, right?
It was.
And in America, the whole month of November is American Diabetes Month. Do we do the same thing in the Bahamas? Do we recognize November as Diabetes Month?
I believe we do. Yeah, so it's like breast cancer awareness in October. November is our month to focus in on the prevention, management, and education surrounding diabetes.
I think this is great. November gives us a month, almost two full months, to prepare ourselves for the holiday season.
Yeah, I don't know if it's good if we come beforehand or if we come afterwards, but November is definitely a great month. And it's been going on for a number of years now. And World Diabetes Day, although it was on the 14th, Dario and myself are still very, very active this month in education people on diabetes.
Absolutely. Yes. I learned about the Bahamas Association of Diabetic Educators and then read that they had an event earlier in the month. In fact, I think it was on the 14th, World Diabetes Day Symposium with the theme Education to Protect Tomorrow. Is that the same theme?
Yes, that would be correct. So every year it's a different focus and... So this entire year, the focus will be on education to protect the future, to protect people from complications, to protect people from the burden of diabetes, and also to prevent people from getting diabetes in the first place, especially when it comes down to type 2 diabetes.
Absolutely. So let's start right there. Let's tell the audience, for people who are not aware, what is diabetes and what is the distinction, what's the difference between type 1 wonderful and type 2?
Right, so diabetes in a nutshell is the body's inability to be able to manage blood sugars. In Dario's case, he had mentioned that it started when he was younger, and he's going to tell you a little bit more about his story. But in type 1 diabetes, what happens is that the pancreas, which produces insulin, has been, for want of a better phrase, under attack by the body's immune system. And it's called an autoimmune condition, which actually affects these cells that produce insulin. So in type 1 diabetes, a person no longer produces insulin. It is not because they didn't eat healthy, they have not exercised. It's through absolutely no fault of their own. And we do tend to see type 1 occur very, very young in life, as young as a baby, going into childhood, into teens, early 20s. Type 2, on the other hand, is not necessarily an absence of the body's inability to actually use the insulin. And although they have the same outcome, the blood sugars are really, really high, it is a completely different, they're completely different conditions. And there are actually many types of diabetes, but the ones that we're going to focus in on today are going to be type 1 and type 2. Dario's condition, type 1, takes up probably about 10%. Of everybody who has diabetes in the world, whereas type 2 obviously is around about 90% of the population of people with diabetes. So that's kind of the quick difference between the two.
Okay, all right. And so should we start, Dario, should we start talking about your experience living with diabetes? And I wanted to ask, when were you diagnosed with diabetes, and how has your life changed since the diagnosis?
So I was diagnosed back in college know, trying to live a normal life. Everyone's going to Bamboo Shack and McDonald's, going to the movies, and just living young, wild, and free. And, you know, all of a sudden I'm experiencing these symptoms where I can't quench my thirst. You know, I'm gasping for breath if I just walk about 15 feet because I'm, you know, extremely exhausted or fatigued. Yeah, I noticed over the course of about 2 months, I dropped about 30 pounds. And, you know, I'm already a slender guy. So to drop 30 pounds, I basically was skin and bones. And after realizing, you know, the constant urination, and I'm talking every couple of minutes, and you know, a very close family member of mine who was a type 2 diabetic noticed the symptoms. And it was like, you know what, come, let's go. Went to the doctor. Got a finger prick, understood that my sugar level was 550 when the normal should be around 70 to 100. And it was an automatic red flag and strict directives to go straight to the ER, straight to hospital. They immediately began working on me and admitted me to hospital to go through an entire series of testing to identify, you know, if I am truly diabetic, what type of diabetic I am, the best route for treatment, x-rays to check certain parts of your body. They went ahead and checked the back of my eyes. Any of the normal complications that come along with someone having heightened blood sugar for over a period of time, they went ahead and checked. But unfortunately for me, that was it. The education around it just wasn't there. The treatment, if I might say, probably just wasn't the best for a young man and my lifestyle at that time. And so over the years from diagnosis, I kind of suffered with diabetes. It was a challenge for me, you know, trying to balance normal life, you know, after college, starting your career and working and, you know, just trying to juggle those different aspects of life, and living with diabetes became very frustrating because the information just wasn't there. And bear in mind, I was diagnosed in the early ages of internet and those coming around. I think when I was diagnosed, YouTube wasn't even a thing yet. Facebook really wasn't around yet. So the information age was in its infancy phase, if it even was born as yet. Mm-hmm. And so the information just wasn't there. It wasn't until when I finally met Nurse Cates and wonderful people at Family Medicine Center, when I learned how to now manage my diabetes in a way that was tailored to my needs. And it helped along the way. Mind you, there are still challenges, even to this day, because diabetes for me and for many of us is a 24-hour concern. We have to watch those sugars and manage as best we can, doing treatments and corrections as needed, all depending on what we're going through. So all the normal things that a normal person body would do automatically, we have to be manual and calculating and all this good stuff. So it's a bit toxic and you can get fatigued. But a person like me, unfortunately, after so long, I've actually been rendered blind because of my diabetes. I was diagnosed with diabetic retinopathy. And so I'm now living a new journey of living with diabetes and also living with blindness. So I want to make sure that as many people as we can help and coach and encourage to do more and to do better, we want to touch each and every one of them.
Absolutely. So if we could sort of go back, what were some of the challenges as a young man sort of just leaving college, beginning his professional life? What were some, or you know, some of the things you had difficulty with when you were initially diagnosed, and how did you overcome them? Like, I could imagine the having to take time to calculate the sugar content in everything that you consume, right, is daunting for a young man who's quickly on the move. But are there other types of challenges like that that you face, and did you deal with the challenges by finding a solution, or did you just become older and not want to do some of the things that were challenging as a young person?
Yeah, as a young person, it's funny that you would say some of the things that you're mentioning wasn't wasn't to my knowledge at that time. So calculating and all that, that wasn't a part of what was asking me. Mm-hmm. The doctor simply said, this is the amount of insulin you take. This is the times you should eat in a day. Go for yourself. Go for gold.
Wow.
And so, yeah, and that's where the lacking was. That's the start of causing someone to have a difficult time with their diabetes and probably setting them up for failure in a sense. And no fault of theirs. I can imagine that they lack the knowledge and skills that they need as well. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was difficult because, you know, at that time, the dietitian had told me I need to eat 6 meals a day. I don't know how in a busy world can I stop and eat.
Mm-hmm.
And when I finally found a doctor and a dietitian that would take me off of that regimen, well, the medication that was advised for me to take was a medication that I later learned is normally given to people who may be living in a nursing home, much older individuals who has someone to manage their daily, but that type of medication kind of helps them because you take one shot in the morning and you manage your sugar levels with your meals throughout the course of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take another 2 shots at night to kind of manage overnight. So, but, you know, I was thinking, you know what, they're helping me. But in a sense, you know, it could have caused me some challenges. And it did. I experienced a whole lot more low blood sugars, not being able to eat at these defined times. Because now you have to, you know, peel away from dealing with a guest or coming out of a meeting just in order to try and get something in your body. So those were the real difficulties, that the lack of knowledge, the lack of information, and the lack of a tailored approach to how I should manage my diabetes caused most of my challenges through those days and caused me to suffer from diabetes as opposed to me being able to live with it now. And technology in this day and age really helps along that line. But again, if the education isn't there around it and the access isn't there, you know, you still end up in a position where you're suffering from diabetes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, so I have a series of questions for both of you, right? What is the average life expectancy for diabetics in the region and in the global north, I guess?
I have absolutely no clue.
Okay.
But I'm more than happy to kind of to find out that information. I mean, one can argue, I mean, let's, in a person who is living with diabetes, who has been fortunate enough to be educated, who is fortunate enough to be strong of mind and focused, the life expectancy is the same as everybody else, if not more, because they're taking the opportunity to take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I think from that perspective, it's definitely not all doom and gloom. But for just like the rest of us, if we are not taking care of our bodies, if we're choosing, say we don't have diabetes and we're choosing to smoke, we're choosing to drink, we're choosing not to take care of ourselves, our life expectancy is going to be much shorter. So I do want to say that in diabetes, if that person can be surrounded through support, education, and have a tailored experience, medical experience to them, the life expectancy is just as much, if not better, than the average population.
Absolutely. And Nurse Cates, you are working with awareness, prevention, and treatment services, right?
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. I also wear a hat where I'm over at Family Medicine Center on Blake Road.
Okay.
And I've been working with people with diabetes for a long, long time, over 20 years, and it's an area I'm really passionate about. And Dario kind of mentioned where we are up to now with information.
Mm-hmm.
And back in Dario's day, he's quite right, we didn't have anything. We had books that were outdated at the most. But now where we find ourselves, Erin, is that there is too much, and often people are stuck not knowing what to do, where to go.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in one breath, water's bad for you if it's non-alkaline. And then in the next breath, water's okay. So I am there to be able to distinguish and say, okay, what is the right treatment here for that person based on the current guidelines and not just on information that's coming out of the internet? The other thing that I would like to say as well is that treatments and access to things that help people with diabetes, and one of the simplest things that we all have right now is our cell phone, right? There's so many apps available that are for free that we can use to help in the management of blood sugars, to just make it so much easier with insulin calculations, just as simple as managing our steps, can certainly make living with diabetes much easier. And yes, in the country, we also have access to insulin pump therapy, continuous glucose monitoring therapy for people, mm-hmm. which is wonderful, absolutely wonderful. But yes. very sadly, in many cases, the cost of these products are prohibitive. You know, they're not available through NHI, mm-hmm. and it can be an absolute struggle to be able to get these products. However, I do want to say that you still can manage diabetes very, very well without having access mm-hmm. to all of these new products. Because they just make living with diabetes easier, but you can kind of still, with education, still make a big difference in your life and still have that long and healthy life that we would all want.
Absolutely. So I found this quote, and I want to ask you, Nurse Cates, how do we turn the illness model of diabetes care and education into a wellness model?
You know, it actually starts with the individual, mm-hmm. and it starts with a desire I feel inside of us. As we all know, we all want to be fit. We all want to be healthy. We want to live our life. And I think it happens as an individual, and then it spreads through the family, and then it goes through the community, through our churches, through our organizations, and then of course it goes through to our bigger resource of the government. So it is a multifaceted mm-hmm. approach from switching that model around and recognizing that the old adage, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I think mm-hmm. that's what it is.
And so two questions.
Yes, ma'am.
You answer them, y'all answer them in the order you want. The first one is, can I cure my diabetes? Like, can I get rid of it entirely? And the second one is, particularly for Dario, but I think you can answer as well, what were some of the things, Dario, that helped you make sort of the shift from illness model to wellness model, right? What were some of the tools, the people, the ideas that help you helped you feel confident that you could manage this condition and live a good life?
And Nurse Cates, you can handle question number two.
Sounds good to me. So if we think about type 1 diabetes, I wish we had a cure. We don't. We're really trying to work on that. And I say we, you know, I feel as I'm a part of the medical community, but in terms of the cure. But at this point in time, there's no cure for type 1. There's still a lot of things that's happening in that regard. In terms of type 2, there are things that we can do to, in fact, we don't like to say cure mm-hmm. so much as putting diabetes in remission. So if you've just been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, the chances are that you can actually make changes in your life where it can go into remission. And when we mean that if you're eating healthily, you're exercising, maybe there's some weight loss, the blood sugars could decrease to a normal level. But there are things that we can't change either, Erin, right? Mm-hmm. We can't change our family history. We can't change our genetics, our age. Mm-hmm. We cannot change our ethnicity. And all those play a part into whether we can cure diabetes. But there are definitely things that we can do, such as lowering the amount of carbohydrates in our diets and stopping sugar, lowering our sugar amount, exercise, and getting our regular checkups can all go towards this whole wellness model that we were chatting about a little bit earlier, mm-hmm. and taking that personal responsibility for our own health and making those healthier choices. Such a long way in making diabetes go into remission, type 2. However, I do want to say that if you have had diabetes for a long time, 10 years or more, that is less likely. And the reason for this is that there are so many other factors that go into diabetes. Type 2 is not just about healthy eating and exercise, mm-hmm. but there are other factors within the body that you can't change. For example, such as the overproduction of glucose by the liver, we have absolutely no control over that, mm-hmm. except through different types of medication. So I do want to give out hope. Yes, you can make a difference. Yes, it can be reversed in type 2, mm-hmm. but it's not a full cure, sadly not.
We're only managing an existing condition.
That is correct.
Absolutely.
The thing is not to get it in the first place as best we can.
Yes.
And put in things in place to help to prevent it.
Yes, absolutely. That's what I said at my marriage counseling courses, Nurse Cates. I said, I figured the best thing to do is not get married at all and we could avoid all of this don't row and stuff. Prevention is always better than cure. Nurse Cates, Mr. Charlton, we're going to go to a break. When we get back from the break, Mr. Charlton, we're going to get to your question and answer. And then I want to talk about goodness, hidden sugars. And since we live in the Bahamas, the land of coconuts, I got the question, does coconut sugar spike blood sugar? We're going to a break. You guys stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You're on the clock and we'll be right back. She asks you for a dime. When you go away, she don't care if you overstay. Cause when that dog on the cat will play. But don't you know that while you are looking for sugar, someone's gonna taste your honey. But don't you know that while you are looking for sugar, someone gonna taste your honey.
Remember when Zoom was just a sound effect? When your living room wasn't your gym? When a cough didn't scare people away? That was the good old days. And thankfully, they are coming back. As things return to normal, remember it is essential to be fully immunized against all vaccine-preventable diseases like COVID-19, diphtheria, tetanus, measles, and influenza. This message is brought to you by PAHO WHO, the Ministry of Health and Wellness, the Caribbean Development Bank, the Government of Canada, and the United States.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good morning and welcome back to On the Clock with Erin Green. We're on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM and we are talking to Mr. Dario Charlton from Babvie, Bahamas, and Nurse Anita Cates from ACE Diabetes at the Family Medicine Center. And we're talking about diabetes awareness, prevention, and treatment. And we're talking with Dario Charlton, who has been gracious enough to share with us some of his experiences, discovering that he was diabetic, living through diabetes and the challenges that he is facing as a diabetic. Good morning.
Morning again.
Morning. Nurse Gates, morning.
Good morning.
All right, we are back. Mr. Charlton.
I have my question. I'm ready to answer.
All right, let's go.
So the most important thing that I've learned in when I began living with diabetes was to learn who Dario was. And when I say that, I mean just how my body reacted to certain things, food, stress, how my body reacted to certain times of day when I had sufficient sleep, a lack of sleep. And so that's where it began. It began understanding just how my everyday life impacted my diabetes. And so I learned how different foods affected me. Okay, orange just really isn't the best for me. It spikes my sugar way too quick. But then I learned that I can eat, you know, certain foods and then I won't have to worry about my sugar levels moving at all. And those foods to me, stuff like pork chops, if I have my leafy greens, you know, I won't have to worry about an excessive amount of insulin to take. And then speaking about that, learning how to count carbs, and that's counting your carbohydrates, identifying how many carbs might be in an apple, and then taking sufficient insulin to cover the amount of carbs. Also learned in the sense that if my sugar level is at 180 and I'm going to eat a meal, well, I want to be able to take sufficient insulin to not only cover the meal, but also make a correction to bring my numbers down from 180 down to the normal range of 100. Mm-hmm. So working along with my diabetes management team, I was able to do a lot of that. And it sounds like rocket science, but it really isn't. And like Nurse Kate said, there are apps and the likes that are out there that can help you understand how your calculations can go. And you're simply just plugging in what your insulin to carb ratio is, which is simply how much insulin do you need to take to cover, you know, a certain amount of carbohydrates. And then once you plug in the amount of carbohydrates you're going to take, those applications begin to help you. And so that was the third thing that really helped. Access to technology. So getting a continuous glucose monitor. So you move from pricking your finger 10 times a day as prescribed to just inserting a sensor into your skin that may last 10 to 14 days and can give you upwards to 200 and some odd in sugar readings in the course of a day. And that really helps because it can tell you, okay, you know before your Monday morning 10 a.m. meeting every week, your sugar level starts to climb. Why is that? Because you're stressed. Something about that meeting has some extreme level of pressure, and that impacts your sugar. Or you are able to identify, okay, when I eat certain foods, my sugar levels drop quicker, and so I need to make an adjustment to my medication or to the regimens in which I'm taking. And so, you know, knowing your numbers is extremely important. Regardless, if you have a continuous glucose monitor, it helps. If you don't, just having your reader and taking sufficient amount of readings really helps an individual to learn who they are and how their diabetes. And then I was privileged enough to be able to get onto an insulin pump, which acts like a human pancreas. It holds a certain amount of insulin. And as necessary, I go into the app or go into the device that will manage the insulin pump and tell it just how much carbs I'm going to eat. It automatically tells me how much insulin that I require. I put in the amount, you know, the sugar level that I'm at. It gives me an additional amount if I need to correct. And it goes for gold. And that in itself helps you to maintain a steady, a more steady glycemic index, meaning, you know, if my sugars is, I want to keep it between 100 and 150, that insulin pump in your continuous glucose monitor can help you bounce in between them. Sometimes you spike, you know, when you're doing it manually, but there, you know, you can find ways once you're learning your body, once you're learning your the foods that are better for you, once you're learning your better exercise regimens to really manage your diabetes in a way that you can live a better quality of life.
Absolutely. I learned of a new resource doing some research on World Diabetes Day, and I learned that the International Diabetes Federation launched a new online platform that provides free interactive courses to help people with diabetes and those who care for them understand and manage their condition. It's called the Understanding Diabetes Platform, and it's offered by the International Diabetes Federation School of Diabetes. That's the Understanding Diabetes Platform. And so I just wanted to throw that out there quickly for people who are nervous or, you know, anxious, but they want to learn more, but they don't know where to go. I think that may be a great place to begin learning about diabetes as well. And so you said something. Let's talk about hidden sugars, right? I am absolutely upset. I'm livid. I almost wrote CARICOM. There are sugars hidden in almost everything now, man.
And oh, man, I tell you. I agree. It's crazy. I looked at some salmon the other day. No word of a lie, Erin. It said salmon and then salt and then sugar. It's like, for crying out loud. Yeah. You're quite right. Absolutely. Everything has sugar in it.
Listen, they even putting sugar in the vegetables now. I thought I was going in the right direction, but somebody tell me no, carrots and corn have plenty sugar in it, and I still have to manage how much of those vegetables I eat. I am not impressed.
Oh, no. And this is where we become the bearer of news that we don't want to. I mean, corn and carrots. So vegetables do contain carbohydrates, which turn into sugar, but hold that thought right there.
Okay.
Some vegetables contain more carbohydrates than others. So things that are above the ground, our wonderful leafy vegetables that we like, and our tomatoes, have a small amount of carbohydrates, very, very small. And if taken in relatively small quantities, it's almost negligent. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But there definitely are the vegetables that have more carbohydrates that turn into sugar. Corn is one. Potatoes, mm-hmm. Carrots, although not as much as potatoes. So anything that's kind of underground.
Wow.
So what we're saying here, I believe, is being aware and then everything in moderation.
Mm-hmm.
We have to think about moderation and about balance. And where we go as humans is that we consume way too much. And I have to have a giggle here. Erin, I'm just going to ask you this question.
Yeah, ma'am.
You know, and no one's gonna know, right? But quick question. Have you ever overeaten mangoes?
Listen, I can be honest with you. One summer, I ate about 200 to 300 mangoes. And then got a chest infection, and went on a course of antibiotics. Had to spend a week. I was basically in bed for a week. Came out the house, saw my mango tree, thought the first thing I'm going to eat now that I've recovered is a mango. Pull a mango off the tree, and the sap burned me. I turned myself allergic to mango. I eat so much mango.
Absolutely. We overconsume, and it reminds me of a story when I was over in a Lutheran and Hayden mangoes. I just had too much. And I was pregnant at the time. I thought I was going into labor.
Wow.
So we often think that because something is natural, you know, we can eat as much as we want. And you mentioned earlier about coconuts, I'll lean into that in a minute,
mm-hmm.
is that everything has to be in moderation.
Mm-hmm.
And like Dario said, and so eloquently put, is that knowing how things affect your body, you know, whether it is stress or whether it's what we put in our mouth, how does that actually affect your blood sugars? So being aware of that. And I do want to say one of the things I do want to mention is that coconut water, even from the tree, in about a cupful, which is 8 ounces,
mm-hmm.
has the equivalent of a teaspoon of sugar in there.
Wow.
So a cup of coconut water, okay, not too, okay, that's fine. But again, we overconsume because we feel as though it's good for us. And we're under this impression that more is better.
Yeah, that's not always the case.
It never, ever, ever is the case because we can overconsume water, right? Where actually, I mean, gigantic amounts. Again, it's all about balance. You mentioned a little earlier about coconut
sugar. Yeah.
And that's just the same. I'm so sad to say that sugar is sugar is sugar is sugar. It turns in, because we can have beet sugar, right? We can have beetroot sugar. We can have corn syrup. You know, we can turn that and corn into sugar. And all of it will, if taken in large quantities, has the ability to spike the blood sugar out of control.
Yes. Okay, so quick question. What is honey? Is it a sugar? Is it like, you know, we extract sugar from corn, from cane, from beets, but then there's stevia, right? Stevia is from a plant. Is honey a sugar, and is honey going to treat my operate in my body the same way sugar does?
Yes.
You hear the sadness, right?
I swear, right? Honestly, I hear you. But again, it's in moderation.
Yeah.
How much honey are you putting in your tea? I mean, we're not, but I'm sure you're not putting the whole jar in there.
I mean, not anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, and here's where the complications occur when it comes to information, is that honey is actually a wonderful, wonderful antibiotic, right? If you have a sore throat, you know, back in the day, they'd mix it with some lime and it can help. So there are beneficial properties of honey that is much better over cane sugar, but don't mix that with the fact that honey will still elevate blood sugars. And in people with diabetes, this might not be an option in a large amount. A small amount, okay. In a large amount, not so much. So always check the blood sugars and your body's response to the foods that you consume.
Absolutely. Now, we were supposed to play the How Bahamian Are You Games edition, right, almost from after the break, but we've been having a wonderful conversation. So as we come to the end of the show, we got about 4 minutes left. I say let's switch over to the How Bahamian Are You game show and let's ask some questions to see if you're head right, if you all understand what healthy living is about. So I'm going to start with a quick question. I'm on a diet regime and I'm trying to make a decision. Cleaner meals or smaller meals? Like, I like pizza and I'm willing to eat a half a slice of pizza because I really like it. Or should I just give up on that and just eat cleaner meals? Cleaner or smaller?
Smaller.
Yeah?
Dario?
I would say cleaner for me. I just want to avoid the amount of insulin I have to take and the amount of exercise I have to do in order to correct it.
I understand your logic, sir. I understand your logic. And I think while I would say to you, but you got to exercise as well, the most important thing is that you understand your calculation.
And pizza, oh my goodness, I'll fight pizza all day. If I eat pizza now, that's a end those blood sugars.
I got you. So your personal culture is, I just rather avoid it.
Correct.
Absolutely.
Unless it's, you know, the kids are eating pizza and I just want to gel in, then yeah, I'll share in just to not
feel
uncomfortable, but it isn't worth it for me.
All right. Another question, family meals or solo meals, particularly for people with diabetes, what's more effective for your day-to-day culture? Eating as a family?
Go ahead, Dario.
I would say family because, you know, knowing my circumstances and hoping that I can groom up a better culture of eating, I like to eat as a family. And so we eat the same food and, you know, hopefully sometimes they would rather a more healthier plate that's similar to mine. But, you know, it's still the same food that's being consumed. So I'd say family as opposed to solo. Solo is just too selfish.
I get you.
I would say family too, mm-hmm. for that connection.
Right.
Family, smaller plates.
It helps to develop a culture of, you know, of how we consume food. We sit together, we take our time, we talk, we think about what it is we're eating, and we take time to understand how it's affecting our bodies.
Yes.
Still water or sparkling water?
Ooh.
I drink still.
Still.
I'm not that bougie.
But look here, I'm not that bougie either, but still water gives sense of soda. Right? Like,
really?
You almost said soda.
Yeah, I hear you. If you put like a little lime in there and a little lemon and it feels a little designer.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Absolutely. Okay. Sweet bread or savory bread? So like Bahamian coconut bread or focaccia bread?
I'll eat coconut bread. That'll probably be a cheat day for me, but I'll eat coconut bread as opposed to a savory bread.
I got you.
Savory bread.
All right. Vegetarian or omnivore?
Omnivore.
I want to move into a plant-based diet, so I want to say vegetarian.
Okay, cool. Fruit or vegetable? Now, listen, when I thought about this question, I was like, who's going to answer a vegetable? Who? It's like
me. I'm going to answer vegetable.
Miss, if you wasn't one of the best Bahamians we have, I was going to take your card.
I know, and I don't even like dillies. I like mangoes, but you know I've been tripped up with mangoes.
Ah, yeah.
And I love fruits, but again, just because of those sugars, I avoid it for the most part. But I love it. I love to have a banana. So for me, it's vegetables.
All right. Avocado, sweet or savory?
Savory.
Just give me the avocado. I'm going to eat it.
You're just going to eat it plain.
I'm not going to add anything to it. I'm going to eat. I love avocados. Love avocados.
All right. Just as we wrapping up, my producer's getting ready to find one of them next. Look here, Bahamians have plenty song about sugar, but then I realized they wasn't talking about diabetes, and so I couldn't play all of them. But I play in some today. So the last question.
That'll raise your blood sugar too.
Yes, sir.
In certain quantities.
People need to know. You know how many people don't know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, because the beer tastes bitter, they don't realize that there are sugars in there.
Lots of carbohydrates in there. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so agave or brown sugar?
For me, it's not. I don't use any sweeteners.
All right. What about alternatives to sugar? Stevia or sweet pond bush?
Again, I don't use any sweet. I drink tea straight up. No sugar. Oh,
so no sugar versus sugar. You are no sugar. Nurse Kate?
I don't like stevia, and I haven't tried the other one, so I got to check that out.
Absolutely. Well, I will tell you, in my experience, what I have learned is this, and this should be the Bahamian motto, the bitterer, the betterer. You see, Priscilla Rollins in the back there singing about the blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice, but I think we need a new song called the bitterer, the betterer, because in my life, I have learned to love the taste of Saracen. Just understanding what it does to my body and what it can do to heal us, I have developed a love for it.
Amazing.
Nice.
Yes.
All right. So, guys, we are all out of time. I can give you 15, 20 seconds to say goodbye to the audience.
Ladies first.
Goodbye, everybody. Thank you so much. You can check us out at Ace Diabetes on Facebook and on the internet. We do have Zoom editions where you can learn all about diabetes in the Bahamas and how it relates to us here in the islands.
Hey, goodbye, everyone. Thank you so much for having us. If you want to learn more, if you need some help with coaching you through your diabetes, please hit up Ace Diabetes. If you have any questions for me directly, you can get me on WhatsApp. I'm at 803-9254. It was such a pleasure.
It was.
Thanks so much, Aaron. You rock.
Absolutely. No, yes. Thank you, guys. And thank you for sharing, Dario. Thank you for sharing your personal experience. And you as well, Nurse Kate. Thank you so much. You guys have a great day. I gotta run. Another sweet man about to come in the station, Mr. Cecil Newry and Guardian Radio AM is up next. You guys have a wonderful, wonderful day.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. I'm caught like a fish, and that's the truth. Oh, Lord, please help me, because I got to eat the fruit. Said, the black of the fish.